So today is February 24th. We're learning Tractate Baba Kama. We're at the end of Mishnah 2. And it's a very short Mishnah. I prepared just a shorter amount of material today because it's Rosh Chodesh. We're starting late. The Mishnah says as follows. Adam mu'ad le'olam. And that is a phrase, actually, we should learn in Hebrew. It's a three-word phrase that describes a very, very central aspect of the laws of torts. Vis-a-vis human beings, Adam mu'ad le'olam, meaning that Adam is forewarned forever. We've learned the word mu'ad many times, and we know that in certain animals, mu'ad stands in contradistinction to another state, which is called, everyone together, mu'ad as opposed to?
Tam,
right? And I mentioned the folk etymology, which is not necessarily historical true, that when you think of the word tam, think of the word tame. Yeah. An animal that's tame, that doesn't do any damage, that's just a good sport. Whereas a mu'ad, for example, in oxen, how do you become a mu'ad?
By goring three times.
By goring three times, right? If you've gored three times, you become a mu'ad. So that's in animals, and then we have to remember, what are the halachic implications? Good morning. The halachic implications of being a tam or being a mu'ad. So if we're talking about goring, which is where this matters, and goring we know is an extraordinary, aggressive action that the animal usually doesn't do. So the tam usually doesn't gore, but if it did it three times, it becomes a goring ox. Now we have to remember, what are the implications as far as payments of being a tam or being a mu'ad? So let's review. Carol Ann, if you're an ox tom, how much do you pay if you gore in the public domain?
Half,
right? Because it's not expected, and therefore the owners didn't have to take any special precautions to prevent it. If it happened, it's not their fault. But it's also not the fault of the person who got gored, or the ox that got gored, that they should suffer all the damage. So it's split between the gorer and the goree, right? However, if the ox that gored now had done it three times in the past, and the Beit Din had witnesses that had happened, that it's recorded in the records of the Beit Din, this ox that is a mu'ad, so then how much does it have to pay if it gores the next time, everyone together?
Full.
Full, right? Has to pay nezek shalem.
Mm-hmm.
Nezek shalem. So when the Mishnah says that adam mu'ad le'olam, that a man who gores, right, or does have the damage, is always mu'ad. The halakhic implication as far as damage money is that he has to pay how much?
In full.
Full, right. That the rule is basically a man is always responsible for all the damage he does. By the way, man includes woman. Mm-hmm. There's never such a thing as a person who's a tam. He's tame, he didn't expect it, it shouldn't have happened, he didn't have to be careful. Never true.
Mm-hmm.
A person always has to be careful, he's always responsible for the damage he causes, and he has to pay full damage money.
What about the child?
The child's parents have to pay for the damage he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's for Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, also, this is also for Miranda. We said page 33, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But now we still would have that the human being, even the human being is responsible because he should know. That is the nature of the human being having intelligence.
Right.
And he's mm-hmm. conscious and he's able to deduct a situation. So in that way, he's always responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But a human being is also... what is it? He's not guilty.
Until proven innocent.
If it's accidental.
Culpable.
That would still be... He wouldn't be culpable.
Okay,
what are the lawyers here?
Basically, what you're saying is not so.
Okay.
In other words, a man is always culpable for the damage he causes. Let's read on and see what it says.
Okay.
It says, Bein shogeg, bein mezid, bein er, bein yashen. Which means whether shogeg means accidental, bein mezid, whether purposeful, bein er, whether awake, bein yashen, whether sleeping, right? Which would seem to mean that if I am sleeping on a bunk bed and I, in my sleep, fall off the bed and fall onto your toys, and I break your toys, Adam Mu'ad Le'olam, I'm responsible. I'm responsible. If I fall off the bed and, God forbid, fall onto your child and break his arm, I'm responsible. What if I break the floor, I'm responsible.
What if the child was there?
Wait a second, Anthony.
Before I went to bed.
So, I started reading at the one below, which the first example that you gave really would not be true.
What do you mean?
Because if something was left in the well, of course, this is the public domain. But if something was left out where it doesn't belong, okay, and you fell on it because you were asleep, you wouldn't. Why would you be culpable?
Well, we're going to get into a few details in another few minutes, but the basic rule is what it says. Even sleeping. It says even I'm sleeping. How could it be that I damaged my sleep? I fell out of bed.
I
rolled over onto the person I was sleeping next to and I broke his arm. Or I rolled onto your vase that was in my bed. The basic law is I'm always responsible. We'll see some exceptions. But basically, I'm always responsible. That's the very nature of being a human being. Etty, you wanted to add?
Well, you were mentioning the same thing, like the case of the man who is asleep and he falls in the floor over a child. The child could not have been there before he went to bed. He was there after.
Okay, so that's an issue we'll have to get to very, very, very soon.
Yeah,
okay. But
that was probably one of the exceptions. Yeah.
So let's, and not only does it say that I'm responsible whether I am awake or sleeping, but also says whether it was shogeg or mezid, whether it was accidental or purposeful, malicious, I'm always responsible. Now, the minute we say this word shogeg, accidental, you might remember that there are specific verses in the Torah that seem to contradict what we just said. There's a certain area of law in which I cause terrible damage to someone else. I'm not defining exactly what I mean because I don't want to give it away. I cause terrible damage to someone else. And the Torah says specifically it was that if it was shogeg, I don't get the full punishment.
Right.
When's that?
Miscarriage.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. No, that's a whole different can of worms. That's a matter of defining what the status of the fetus is. And actually there, I do pay full damage for the fetus. Mm-hmm. I pay full damage for the fetus, given that the Torah says it's not a capital case, it is a case of torts. But Ilana just started to say...
Killing.
In murder, the Torah... Let's say killing, let's not say murder. In killing, the Torah specifically and explicitly in two places tells us that if you kill b'mezid, mezid maliciously, purposely, then v'natata nefesh tachat nefesh, you should give life for life. Whereas, if you killed accidentally, the example being, remember the Torah says, if you're in the forest chopping wood, and either the handle of the ox flies off or one of the wood chips falls off and hits someone and kills them, what's the law of the Torah?
Run, right? Run to your mikvah.
Run to a city of refuge. There the Torah says that the punishment is not death, it's not life for life, it's rather exile. What we call today jail.
Mm-hmm. It's really voluntary exile.
If you don't mind dying, then it could be voluntary.
You're taken away from your family. Right. You're going to a place that is hostile.
So the point is like this. So why does the Torah say that the true culpability for killing is life for life, but if you did it Bishogeg accidentally, then you only get exile? And by the way, exile is not necessarily for your whole lifetime. It's only until the present high priest dies, which might be another day, might be another 50 years. But in principle, it's not necessarily life imprisonment. Why does the Torah make that distinction between mezid and shogeg, between malicious and accidental vis-a-vis killing? Whereas, on the other hand, vis-a-vis torts, damage to someone, to someone's body or someone's possessions, the Torah says explicitly, there's no... When I say the Torah says, I mean in the Mishnah. The Torah says there's no difference bein shogeg, bein mezid. whether it was accidental, whether it was malicious, the same culpability.
Well, you cannot restore if you have killed.
I mean, that's right.
If the recipient of the act dies, you cannot restore. You cannot. You can't pay for the doctor bill. You can't pay to have the arm set. You can't pay to have them. To have a craftsman recreate, you know, put the pieces of the vase back together again.
That's the point. That's fantastic.
That's the distinction. But there's also...
Does anyone understand that? So let me just say it. Right? What Bruce is saying is that when we're talking about restitution, paying for the damage you did, that's when we say, Bein Shogeg, Bein Mezid, you're responsible to fill all the loss that you caused. But in murder, in principle, the Torah says you can never restore a human life and you can never pay money, actually forbidden to pay money in a murder case, because there's nothing we can do in principle to restore a human life. So therefore, in murder cases, it's a whole different can of kosher worms. We're not talking about restitution, we're talking about punishment. And when it's punishment, so then there's a difference between Shogeg and Mezid.
But you also have to differentiate between punishment and vengeance. You see,
differentiating.
But there should be philosophically, we do not believe in vengeance.
Okay, so we're not talking about punishment.
We believe in punishment. I'm trying to draw a parallel.
Yeah, but when you tell them to flee to exile to the city of refuge, is to save yourself from the avenger. From the family who wants to kill you because you killed the other person.
That's the shot of one of the sets of verses in the Torah. But the rabbis didn't understand it like that. They understood it's a positive act that the person has to be in the city of refuge as punishment and as rehabilitation.
And there is a proof to it.
It was an accident?
Say it again?
You say a rehabilitation, but it was an accident.
Because accidents are not without guilt. They are just with less guilt than malicious murder.
But a lot of people say that there's no such thing as an accident.
Right. Why didn't you check your ox head to make sure... Axe head.
Handle.
Yeah.
No, axe head.
Yeah.
To make sure that it was not loose.
It was on the handle.
Why did you not clear the perimeter before you were chopping wood, etc.?
Okay.
Okay, so back to our Mishnah.
There's also a proof that it's not only to run from the avenger, because the high priest might die a day after you are in your miklat.
Okay.
So it's not, the avenger is still there.
Right, and the halacha says he can no longer get you.
Yeah.
Because any good Boy Scout knows that you tell everybody, if you're chopping wood, don't stand in front of me.
Right.
Okay.
So, after we talked about the context in the Torah, I want to now talk about the context in the Mishnayot themselves. Remember that there was one Mishnah we saw many, many weeks ago that was basically a table of contents of all the material that came later. We're still in the framework of that same Mishnah that's a table of contents for all the material that comes later. So with that hint, I ask you...
Chapter 1, Mishnah 1?
I didn't say it. I wanted you to find it. So when it says here, Adam Mu'ad Leolam, a human being is always forewarned, why are we bringing up here Adam? In other words, where is the table of contents, and where in the table of contents did it mention Adam, such that at this point in the flow of the Mishnayot, we should bring in the matter of Adam? Wait a second, Ilana. Ilana knows, of course.
Mishnah 2?
No.
It's in chapter 2, though, right?
No.
Okay.
We are getting near hot cold.
It's chapter 1, Mishnah 4.
Okay, very good. Chapter 1, Mishnah 4, the last Mishnah of the first chapter, is really, if we were to re-edit this, is really the first Mishnah of the second chapter. And not only of the second chapter, but also of the third. In other words, the fourth Mishnah of the first chapter is the table of contents for the following two chapters. And we remember that the fourth Mishnah of the first chapter began with four words, which were Hamisha Tamim v'Hamisha Muadim. There are five tame conditions, and there are five forewarned conditions. And at the in the middle of the discussion of the five forewarned conditions, the Mishnah said Adam. It gave us lots of other conditions in which damage done is considered to be forewarned. And near the end of the list, it said V'ha'adam.
Put him in good company.
Right, Adam is forewarned just like certain types of oxen and other animals are. And being that that's the case, so in our Mishnayot that we've been learning all of chapter 2, that is a fleshing out of that table of contents, we finally got to the matter of Adam.
We are finally together with the snake again.
And the bardalas, yes. And the dove, and then the mare. Okay. So that's why we're talking now about Adam Muad Le'olam, while we've been talking about other ways of doing damage. And we read in the Mishnah, it says whether it is shogeg, whether it's mezid, whether it's accidental, whether it's malicious, whether it is awake, whether it's sleeping. And now the Mishnah goes on to seemingly give examples. So let's now read on our Mishnah at the end of chapter 2, the second half of this very short Mishnah. It says, Sima et ein chaviro, poked out the eye of his fellow, Vishiber et hakelim, and broke the vessels, meaning the vessels of his fellow, Mishalem nezek shalem, pays full damage. The first question I want to ask at this point, and it's the second question on the sheet, at the top of the sheet that I gave out, when it says, poked out the eye of his fellow, v'shiber et hakelim, and broke the vessels, what is the meaning of the letter vav that connects between the two parts of that sentence? Poked out his fellow's eye, v'shiber, broke the vessels.
Are there two?
It could be and or or, but which is it?
Or.
So Ilana says it's or. No, it's not and or, it's or.
My translation.
Well, you're right. The minute you say and or, you mean it even includes or.
Yes.
What does the translation say?
My translation says, if one blinded the eye of his fellow, or
right.
Broke his vessel.
So the translator is right. Mm-hmm. So the vav in Hebrew can mean and, can mean or. You have to check the context. In our context, it's not saying that you pay nezek shalem only when you do both types of damage, when you poke out the eye and you break his vessels. It's saying whether you did that or you did this, then you have to pay nezek shalem. In other words, and what actually is it saying? Simeit ein chaviro, took out the eye. Mm-hmm. Or broke the vessels, they're examples of two different categories. What are the two different categories?
Well, one is things and one is bodily.
Right. Yeah. Right. Property damage and physical damage. Or to use the order here, it's physical damage, bodily injury is what we call it, bodily injury, or damage to one's possessions, whether the man did this or did that. Mishalem nisak shalem. He pays full damage.
Is sime poked out or blinded?
If one blinded.
The same thing.
If you poke out their eye, I guess they're blind.
So now let's point out what the Mishnah actually did. The Mishnah has two parts. Well, you know what? Let's say the Mishnah has four parts. First it says, Adam mu'ad le'olam. That's the principle. At the end it has three words, Mishalem nisak shalem. That, of course, is the implication, the application. If he's Muad Le'olam, it means he's Mishalem Nezek Shalem. He pays full damage. And the two parts of the Mishnah in the middle tell us all the different conditions under which this is true. First, the Mishnah gives us conditions stated conceptually, and then it gives us conditions stated by way of example. Right? When it says, Bein shogeg, bein mezid, whether accidental, whether malicious, bein er, bein yeshen, whether awake, whether sleeping, that is conceptual language. Talking about the mindset and the condition of the person who did the damage. Then when it says, poked out the eye of his fellow or broke his fellow's kelim, that's another set of conditions, but these are not the mindset of the damager, these are rather the damage that was done. And here also it's telling you whether this or that, he's always culpable, but here it's not listed conceptually, it's listed through examples, right? It could have said conceptually whether he damaged the body or damaged the possessions. So it's an interesting Mishnah. It moves from conceptual terminology to terminology of examples, but we understand what it's saying. Now,
but Ben Er Ben Yashen is different from Ben Shogeg Ben Mezid.
Oh, you're asking what's the difference?
Ben Shogeg Ben Mezid deals exactly with the intention. Ben Er Ben Yashen deals with the amount of awareness, maybe.
Well, true, very good. Very good. I hadn't even thought of going into that.
Would you repeat that, please?
Ben Beshogeg Ben Bemezid, the first sub-phrase, means whether you with intention or with malicious intention, without intention or with malicious intention, deals with your intention totally. Ben Eo Ben Yashen, whether you're asleep or awake, deals really with your awareness condition. If you're asleep, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Although I suspect all mistakes happen when your mind is slightly asleep.
Okay.
Wait. I'm rereading this, and let me tell you as I see it, is if a terrible thing, just take my words, if a terrible thing happens, like somebody's eye is poked out, I think it would be much easier if we understood it that way. Forget about noxious, forget about anything else. An eye is so important because they're talking about an eye.
Yeah.
Talking about an eye. Whether you accidentally or intentionally took out an eye, you got to pay full damage.
That's what they say.
That's what they're saying. Okay. And it would be much easier for us to understand if they said it in five words rather than 15.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, they want to exclude all arguments, I think.
Well, but they could say without any discussion.
Let me ask the following question now. When it says poked out the eye or broke the vessels, and we understand these are two different categories, one of bodily injury, the other of damage to possessions. Mm-hmm. One of these two categories is explicit in the Torah, and the other is not.
Bodily
which is which?
Damage.
Say it again, please.
Bodily damage is in the Torah.
Is in the Torah, and everyone knows the expression.
Mm-hmm. Eye for an eye.
Right, eye for eye. Right? It comes straight from the Torah.
But if you read it in the Torah, you expect that somebody else will poke your eye.
Okay, that's a different question. But the fact that you are responsible for poking out someone's eye, and you're responsible for bodily damage, that's explicit in the Torah. But the fact that you have to pay when you break someone's vessels, that's actually, believe it or not, not explicit in the Torah.
Wow.
The Torah says, Makeh behema yishalmenu. If you hurt someone else's animal, you have to pay. Mm-hmm. But the Torah never says explicitly that you have to pay if you hurt someone else's vase, or watch, or iPhone.
But
wait a second, how do we know?
Possession?
Because we can extrapolate one from the fact that you have to pay if you hurt someone's animal. It's also possession. And also from the fact that the Torah says that if your animal hurts someone animal, you have to pay, right? We've learned that already. So all the more so, if you have to pay when your animals hurt someone else's vessels, then all the more so would you have to pay when you yourself hurt someone else's vessels. But it's not explicit in the Torah. The Mishnah has to say it here, black and white, so we are sure that that's the law. Okay, now that we've said that, let's go into the Talmudic sources. And this will bring us to things that Etty was bringing up and that Miranda was hinting to. So the first source I brought here is in B on the sheet. B. Mm-hmm. Babylonian Talmud Tractate Baba Kama, page 26b. And on our Mishnah, the Talmud asks, in three words, the following question. Mana hanimile. Whence is this ruling deduced? Okay. How do you know that you have to pay eye for eye, I'm sorry, take it back, that you have to pay for an eye you poked out with full damages? Chizkiah said, and thus taught Atana of the school of Chizkiah, Scripture states, wound for a wound, right? Petza tachat patza. To impose liability in the case of accidents, as in that of maliciousness. In the case of inadvertence, as in that of willfulness. In other words, we have here a braita, right? A source from before the year 200, that not only gives us the law found in our Mishnah, but adds to the law, and also gives us a source. Because when the Torah says, eye for eye, wound for wound, burn for burn, it says it without any limitation. It doesn't say only under certain circumstances. Therefore, we learn it's all circumstances, whether it's accidental or it's malicious, whether it's inadvertent or whether it's willfulness. It doesn't matter. Always has to pay Nezek Shalem.
So the Braita continues till the end of the quote, or Amar Rabba is another part?
Amar Rabba that I didn't read yet is not the Braita. Okay. That is in the third generation of Babylonian Amoraim. But what we read until now is a Braita. And as you notice in the Braita, we read it in English, it doesn't just say accidents as well as maliciousness, it also says inadvertence as well as willfulness.
Yes.
It gives more legal terminology that says in any circumstance, doesn't matter how unaware you are, you're responsible. Even inadvertence, which even is less than an accident. Inadvertence, the Hebrew...
What is inadvertence?
Onus. Even onus.
Onus is kafui, right?
Not in this context. But onus means I had absolutely, positively no idea.
Oh, that's not regular onus.
It's even less intentional than shogeg. It's not just an accident. I wasn't even aware. Let me give you an example. If I'm chopping wood in the forest and the axe head flies off and hits someone and causes damage, not death, damage, right? That is shogeg. I wasn't aware. But I could have perhaps taken more precautions. But onus is...
If there was somebody on that tree and you didn't...
If there was someone who was hiding in the bushes and I could never have seen him there. And the accident hit him. That's onus. It's a greater degree of... a greater degree of less responsibility.
So onus has two meanings. That are totally different.
They're not totally different.
Rabbi, would you say that the Mishnah has been influenced by commerce?
Of course.
This Mishnah.
It's not influenced by. What do you mean, commerce? Commerce is life.
What I'm saying is this. You told us that in the Torah it only mentions the eye.
No, I didn't say that.
Only mentions what?
It says eye for eye, wound for wound, burn for burn.
Yeah, but it doesn't say vessel.
Oh, that you mean, yes, you're right. That's what I said.
So
yes.
That was an influence of modernity.
It's just life. It's just life.
No,
the
no.
Mishnah reflects the application of halacha to life.
Yeah, but I think this is terrible that they equate a vessel with an eye.
They don't.
Wait, I mean, I'll make a comment. This had to be put in by a Republican.
Do you know?
Okay, let's go on.
I am thinking that you know, you were saying this is influenced by commerce,
yeah.
But I think this is influenced by just being a free human being with full dignity. I was reading yesterday about slavery in Senegal a few centuries ago, and how they put human beings in this tiny little cell for a few months before they were shipped to America. Mm-hmm. And how when a human being got sick, they just tossed him off into the sea.
Right.
And when they were shipped. And so, you know, his vessels or his property or his eye or his arm or none of it would have been important, because what you are replacing is just, you are replacing this human being with another human being and you are paying for it. And so the, here it has to do with the dignity and the freedom of, you know, we are no longer slaves. We are now human beings with our own rights.
So we're going to go on in the Talmud.
I like your comment.
And after the Braita is a statement of Rabba, who's in the third generation of Babylonian Amoraim. It's about the year 300, 320, 30, 40, 50. And Rabba explains what the full import of this Braita is, and the full import of our Mishnah. In the case of a stone lying in a person's bosom without his having knowledge of it, right? I just didn't know. I had no idea that a stone got caught on my lap. It's just there. So that when he rose, it fell down and fell on someone's vase and broke it. There will be liability for damages. That's a case of onus. I had no way of knowing that the stone was there. It floated in from the trees when I wasn't looking, and I get up and it falls down, it breaks something, I'm liable. But look what the last few words of Rabba say. But exemption regarding the additional four items. So it's just something we probably talked about in the past, and I'll just very, very briefly write it on the board, that we are responsible usually. Human beings are responsible for five different types of damages we cause. I'll explain what I mean. There's nezek, tsar, ripui, shevet, and boshet. Nezek is damage, tsar is pain, ripui is doctor bills, shevet is unemployment, and boshet is embarrassment. I don't know how to spell embarrassment. I'm embarrassed. So, when an animal causes damage, the owner only has to pay damage.
Mm-hmm.
How much loss was caused? Right? If my animal, as we've learned, gores your ox and kills the ox, have to pay, if it's a tam, 50% of the damage. If it's a muad, has to pay 100% of the damage for the lost ox. How much was the ox worth? But if I, a human being, adam muad li'olam, if I gore your ox and bite it and kill it, then I have to pay not only damage, but I have to pay other categories when they're relevant. So if I kill your ox, I didn't cause embarrassment to the ox, I didn't cause unemployment, doctor bills, pain, but let's say...
But you caused pain to the owner.
Right, but let's take an easier case in which I inadvertently chopped off your arm, or something of that sort with the ox head, let's say. So I not only have to pay damages, I have to pay pain. The Beit Din finds a way to assess the monetary value of the pain I caused you. Secondly, the doctor bills. I have to pay not just the nezek and the tsar, I have to pay the doctor bills, ripui. And fourthly, I have to pay the shevet. I have to pay you the money that you lost when you were out of work for the amount of time that you were recuperating. And fifthly, I have to pay the boshet, the embarrassment. The Beit Din finds a way to assess the monetary value of the embarrassment you might have been caused by having your eye damaged. You couldn't put makeup on for that month. Cause you a certain embarrassment, the Beit Din finds a way to assess that monetarily. What Rav is telling us now is that Adam Mu'ad Le'olam, but that only applies to Nezik. The other four payments, I only have to pay when I did the damage purposely.
Okay.
Wait a second.
What about the ox that we put with the children? And if the ox... subsequently harms a child, God forbid, the owner of the ox pays what?
The owner of the ox pays the damage to the child.
The damage.
Nezek, right? Pays the nezek. Right. The owner of the ox doesn't have to pay 1, 2, 3, 4.
Why?
I'm afraid someone asked that.
No, the second one in particular. I mean, okay, let's say it's not a child who's employed, but let's say it's a child who was injured. But you would be responsible, yes?
Responsible only for the nezek.
But I don't understand why.
And I understand why you don't understand, because I'm not sure I understand either.
Okay,
Wait, let me think a second.
Okay.
Right, so I'm not responsible there.
Okay.
Right, that's the law, I'm not responsible. That's the law, I'm not responsible.
I don't think that's the law, Rabbi.
Mm-hmm. Okay, could be that I'm wrong.
With all your respect. Look, when we look at the mission, at the quotation from Rabbah, Rabbah gives an example only of Ones, not of other cases. And only in Ones, I think, he releases you from the other four things. At least that's my way of reading that quote.
I understand why you're saying that. I actually spent some time looking it up. But that's not the way we hold. We hold that whether it's onus, whether it's shogeg, you only pay these four other payments.
Then why does he give an example of onus?
I can't tell you.
But no, in here,
I can't tell you why.
Does this give the answer? When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox is not to be punished. So if
That's a tam. We're talking about a mu'ad. Mu'ad or a man that does it. But the question remains on the table.
What was the question?
The halakha that I stated is when an animal that I own, let's say a mu'ad, done it three times already, has to pay full damage.
Yeah.
Does damage and hurts someone. The halakha is that the owner has to pay only for the damage itself, but not for the pain, the doctor bills, the unemployment, and the embarrassment. Those four payments are made only when a human being maliciously hurts another human being.
Okay.
And
but not when your property is responsible.
Right. The point is, to say it conceptually, that doesn't fully answer Miranda's question, but answers it partially. The four payments are only when the damage was done maliciously. And by definition, my animals don't have malicious intent. They're just animals. So there's an animal damaging is just like me damaging without intent.
Yeah.
In both cases.
Even if it's a mu'ad. Okay.
Even if it's a mu'ad. And we only pay all five damages when there is the intent to damage. Malicious. Mm-hmm. When it's what we call mezid. And I understand Miranda saying it's not fair. Because it means that when my ox hurts your child, I don't have to pay the doctor bills. And I think that you're right. I think that's the halakha.
But is that more of a civil issue than it is criminal
yeah,
issue?
Yeah, it's a civil issue.
It's a civil issue. I mean, not to mix here, but really, in like today's circumstance, if you have a dog that is, like, let's say you have a pit bull, okay?
Yeah.
And if the pit bull, God forbid, harms a child, unfortunately it happens,
right?
What are you responsible for? But it's a civil, those bills, the payment is really a civil issue as opposed to a punishment.
I think that's true.
No, and Bruce says the reading, if you want to be very literal, let's take it this way. I am behind your car in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I have my foot on the brake. We're all standing still. I take my foot off the brake, and all of a sudden, my car accidentally revs up, and I run into the back of you.
You're responsible.
But responsible for what?
That's why I think we are all misreading this. I think we're all misreading it.
How
rather,
that?
What's the proper reading?
What I think it might mean is, just very simply, if I had a stone on my lap that I didn't realize it was there.
And not a kidney stone.
Not a kidney stone.
That's not on your lap, that's
sitting
in your lap.
You know, we had been sitting by the windmill in Jerusalem, and some kid came by and just playfully put a stone in my lap. I didn't realize it. I was davening at the time. And I happened to stand up, and you had your water bottle, your glass water bottle in front of me, and I stood up, okay, and it broke. It might be your favorite water bottle. It was given to you by your bubby.
And you made a pilgrimage with it.
I pay you nothing for embarrassment. All I do is pay for your water bottle.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
But what happens if, in my example, when my car jerked forward and ran into you and you had a $100,000 doctor bill to repair your back? I don't think we could go to the Rebbe and he would say, no, Bruce, you only have to pay for the pain and suffering, and Rabbi, you have to bear
Rashi takes the statement.
But there's no rhyme and reason to it. It's basically unfair. It is not Jewish.
Wait a second. Okay. Look, I admit that there's a certain degree here of something looks like unfairness.
Yeah.
And I can take some time to look it up. But okay. Let's go on.
What does Rashi say?
Rashi says that whether it's onus or even shogeg, there's no arba advarim. There's no these four things.
Shogeg, I understand.
Even
onus.
Yeah.
But with intent also not arba advarim?
No.
No, because if I intended to damage you, then I have to pay all five.
Ah, okay.
As we said, right? That's what...
Can I ask a quick question?
Very quickly.
Okay. How do... Are these modern or are these... from the Talmud.
This is from the Mishnah.
Okay. How did they... unemployment is measured because now we know how much we pay per hour for...
The same thing 2,000 years ago.
Did they pay per hour? They didn't.
By day. It's the same thing.
They
you can
pay
do the
by
computations.
Day.
But wait a second. Yeah, but you just
well,
do the computations.
Well, I need to know because that is important.
We want to go on
to the way
to most interesting thing here. Most interesting thing here. You're leaving. What can we do? Look at the next source here. From the Talmud of the Land of Israel, Tractate Bava Kamma, chapter 2, Mishnah 6. And this is, again, not the Babylonian Talmud, but what we call the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Talmud of the Land of Israel. Said Rabbi Yitzchak, the Mishnah refers to a case in which they were both sleeping. Remember we talked about sleeping?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Of course, remember the Mishnah. What do you mean, both sleeping? The Mishnah only talked about one person. Who is both of them? So we have to think about this. The Mishnah refers to a case in which they were both sleeping. But if one was sleeping and his fellow came and went to sleep next to him, the one who went to sleep next to him is the only forewarned one. So let's think of a case in which two people are sleeping in the same bed, or in one bed above, one bed below, and the one above rolls over and either rolls onto the one next to him or rolls off the bed onto the one below him and hurts him or his vessels. He's sleeping with a teddy bear and he crushes the teddy bear. So what's the law? From the Mishnah, we would have assumed that the one who does the damage is always, 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 always culpable and responsible. But now, what we read in this modification, this interpretation in the Talmud Yerushalmi, is that the one who does the damage is always responsible unless someone else is responsible. Right? I'm responsible if I did the damage, unless you, who got damaged, are more responsible than I by going to sleep right underneath me without me knowing it. Then you can't blame me. But if we went to sleep at the same time, Or if I, the one who rolled onto the other, went to sleep after you were already there, then Adam Muad Le'olam. In other words, the principle again is that I'm always responsible unless someone else is more responsible.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And what I want to read now is simply the codification of this modification that we saw in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The codification begins in D on the sheet, Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alfasi. So let's do an exercise. Everyone can figure out, wait a second, don't say anything. Everyone can figure out where Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi lived.
España.
Wait a second. You can figure it in the following fashion. Alfasi is his name.
Yeah.
So the sound at the end, Alfasi, E, mm-hmm. Well, today you know that if you live in...
Ah.
Wait a second.
I didn't say, I just said
Ah. Right. I was afraid I would head you off. If you live in Yerushalayim, uh-huh. You're called a Yerushalmi. Mm-hmm. If you live in Tel Aviv, you're called a Tel Avivi. If you live in Haifa, you're called a Haifa'i. So if you live in Alfasi, you live in Alfas, you're called Alfasi. Mm-hmm. So the question is now, where is Alfas? Where is the place Alfas? So I'll give you a hint. In Arabic, Al, at the beginning of the word, is the. Mm-hmm. So this is Yitzhak, the Fasi.
Fez,
right? He's from Fez. So we're here, he's in Morocco.
From here, she left.
We're here in the 11th century. He lived a good 90 years. All of the 11th century, the 1000s, was the time of Yitzhak Alfasi. He's known as the last of the Gaonim and the first of the Rishonim. In other words, he marks the end of the period of antiquity and the beginning of the Middle Ages in Jewish literary history. The last of the Gaonim. The Gaonim were the heads of the Shivot that continued the study that the Talmudic rabbis began in Babylonia and in the land of Israel, and in, of course, Babylonia spread out to Morocco and to the North African coast. Rav Yitzhak Alfasi was considered to be the last of the great rabbis of the period of antiquity and the first of the Rishonim, the first of the medieval authorities. He wrote a commentary...
The Rishonim?
Yeah. And he wrote a commentary on the Talmud that is 90% a reproduction of the Talmud. And just 10% commentary. What he did is, he left out all the discussion in the Talmud and just copied the final decisions. And he added 10% of commentary. But the fact that he so deftly left out all the conflicting opinions and all of the discussion and just brought the final decision, he shined a light on what the halakha actually is. And in the rare cases he found it necessary, he explained. So, look what Rav Yitzhak Alfasi writes. Mishnah, I brought an English translation. Man is always mu'ad, whether it was accidentally or malicious, whether awake or asleep. I spelled asleep wrong. If he blinded his neighbor's eye or broke his articles, full compensation must therefore be made. In other words, what the Rif did is he quoted our Mishnah word for word. That's what he did. And then he added the following. Gemara Yerushalmi. Said Rabbi Yitzchak, the Mishnah refers to a case in which they were both sleeping. But if one was sleeping and his fellow came and went to sleep next to him, the one who went to sleep next to him is the only forewarned one. In other words, what the Rif did is he copied this comment from the Talmud Yerushalmi. Just copied it, no commentary. But he's telling us that he believes that even though this is written in the Yerushalmi and not the Bavli, not in the standard Babylonian Talmud, but in the second Talmud, the minor one, he believes it's halakha. So he wrote it into his commentary. And then, we'll just end by showing how Maimonides, the Rambam, in his Mishnah Torah, his magnum opus of Jewish law, he followed the lead of the Alfasi, of Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, who followed the Talmud Yerushalmi in bringing this matter, that yes, you're always responsible, even when you're sleeping, except if someone else is more responsible. And we'll just read the Rambam, but that will end. So the Rambam says as follows. A man is considered mu'ad at all times, whether acting intentionally or unintentionally, whether asleep or awake or intoxicated. The Rambam adds intoxicated. It's coming
He's
up firm here.
He's more modern.
The Rambam here is showing his bias against intoxication. If he injures a colleague,
he's in a Muslim community.
Very good.
Muslim spirit.
Or damages a colleague's property, right? That's our Mishnah. Whether it's damage to body or damage to property, he must always reimburse him from his choice's property. Like, you have to pay full damage, and if you're paying not money but property, you have to give the best of the property. That's something else we discussed in the past. When is a person who causes damage while asleep required to make restitution? When they both went to sleep at the same time, and one turned over and injured his colleague or tore his garment.
That's right.
If, however, a person was sleeping and a colleague came and laid down next to him, only the one who laid down afterwards is considered mu'ad, because he knew there was someone else there. If the person sleeping, the one who went to sleep first, injures the one who came afterwards, he is not liable. Similarly, if a person places a utensil next to a person who is sleeping, and the one who is sleeping breaks it, he's not liable, right? You're responsible putting it there while I was asleep. For the one who placed the article down was the one who was mu'ad and who acted with negligence.
I like that. Makes sense.
And you said it with a yawn to indicate exactly what we're talking about.
I think it's very beautiful because the underlying issue with Judaism is a demand of awareness.
So what would
happen? And that's what you have to be aware whether you're asleep or whether not. Be aware of good things that happen to you. Be aware of damage you can do. Be aware of everything around you. You cannot walk through life sleeping.
Shabbat shalom.
We never read the Tanakh. Why do we have it here? Just for inspiration?
You're right. I wanted to read the verse that it said eye for eye.
Okay.
And wound for wound. Okay. We didn't read it.
But I just said you didn't read it.
Right.
Thank you so much.